Welcome to Tech It to the Limit, the humorous and surprisingly informative podcast that makes digital innovation in healthcare as entertaining as it is relevant. I'm Sarah Harper.
And I'm Elliot Wilson. And we're here to pull back the curtain on the world of digital transformation in healthcare.
Don't worry, you don't need a medical degree to join in on the fun. Just a sense of humor and a penchant for all things health tech.
So buckle up, folks. It's time to
Tech It to the Limit.
What's up, Elliot?
What's up, Sarah? Oh, and welcome, Tech It to the Limit listeners. We are joining in this month with the celebration for Nurses Month. And I'm celebrating Nurses Month, Sarah, by joining the American Telemedicine Conference Nexus Conference starting this weekend. It's a lot of fun. I'm joining a panel with some amazing nurse leaders to talk about AI's place in virtual nursing. So I can't wait to tell you about the Nexus Conference on the back end. But here on Tech It to the Limit, we have our own way of honoring nurses by highlighting all the tech that forgot to include them in their design, right? Ooh, gentle reminder much. Isn't that right, Sarah?
Yeah, ouch. We're introducing a new segment this month called Tech That Didn't Ask a Nurse, spotlighting all the brilliant ideas that somehow forgot the people actually using them. Because nothing says innovation, Elliot, like building a product without your customer. That's right, listeners. Let's draw our attention to the dire need for nursing involvement in health tech innovation, where you know, it's not just something to talk about, right? To actually walk about. We're going to highlight this episode some real tech blunders that if you're listening closely and you follow the 10 commandments of user-centered design, you can be sure to avoid before your next capital call. So time's a-wasting. Let's dive right in. First up, we're going to talk about the rounding app that needed a master of fine arts in logging in. So this is a real case. According to a HIMSS workforce survey from 2023, not too long ago, 63% of nurses log into more than four systems to begin their shift.
Still.
Many hospitals, right? In what is this, 2025? Many hospitals still use these apps that require separate logins for rounding, notes, vitals, and even ordering gloves. So this new streamlined rounding app boasts single sign-on, except unfortunately, single means signing into a rounding platform, the EHR, a vitals dashboard, a fax emulator, and the admin Spotify playlist just for vibes.
Right. And plus, it's like it's voice activated, but only if you say log in a soothing British accent. Otherwise, it just it just thinks that you're just angry and, you know, and triggers an HR ticket.
Yeah, we're intentionally not naming names here on the show.
No.
But if you're listening, product designers, you know who you are and do better. Just do better.
All right. I got one. Smart beds that are dumb. So here's the real actual case. So according to a 2024 study published in the Journal of Medical Research or Medical Internet Research, false bed exit alarms contribute to alarm fatigue and lower nurse responsiveness. And smart beds track patient movement, but also send a ton of false alarms for inconsequential things like tugging on the sheets. I mean, who doesn't like grab the sheets and roll over
multiple times per night?
Fluff my pillow, you know? You know what's smart? A nurse. You know, it's not a smart bed that goes DEFCON 1 every time I fluff my pillow.
Yeah, honestly, I can get behind that. My bed screams less when I get up to pee at night. And I don't even need to wear those fall risk socks, although they are very fashion forward.
They really help when you're all alone in the dark at night trying to get to the bathroom.
Right. Trying.
Grippy socks.
Okay. Another like embarrassingly real case for you. According to Becker's Health IT, natural language processing tools, aka artificial intelligence, often fail to capture the nuance in nurse assessments. AI clinical documentations that air quotes help nurses chart, but still require 80% manual correction. So let's imagine I'm a nurse and I dictate patient resting comfortably, right? AI is going to chart for me. Patient is in respiratory distress and possibly Sagittarius.
And then audit flags it because, like, no one signs off on astrological diagnoses anymore, right? I mean, they always require some kind of pre-auth. I miss the good old days.
Yeah, right? OBS, horoscope pre-auth.
All right. Okay, Here's another one for you. Okay. This one is the scheduling bot that ghosted the night shift. So according to a report from the American Nursing Association on nurse staffing and tech misuse, automated staffing tools that optimize for budget, not human capacity or continuity of care. So it's like the scheduling. Yeah, I know, right? Oh my God, we're trying to, it's productivity, not human capacity. The scheduling bot proudly scheduled 24 nurses for the 11 a.m. shift and no one for the night shift. But, you know, the CFO's KPIs, they're thriving.
Oh, yeah. Nothing says patient safety like an ICU run by a janitor and a Roomba.
My goodness.
So, okay, Elliot, what's the takeaway here for our listeners? Essentially, we've just listed off some embarrassingly true tech blunders. So if you're listening and you're a tech developer or you're working with a developer and you happen to be working in a space where nursing currently operates, yeah. And you haven't actually talked to a nurse yet, maybe you should take a lap with a gait belt.
Yeah, or maybe like a focus group once in a while, or at least maybe a coffee with somebody that wears scrubs for a living.
Yeah, okay, totally. And we'll kind of dive into this a little bit more with our guest today, Dr. Katie Boston Leary, about true nurse-centered and nurse-driven, nurse-led health tech design. But that's it, listeners, for this month in tech that didn't ask a nurse. Stay tuned because next month we're going to be looking at the AI that tried to auto-triage and ended up triaging itself into an existential crisis.
Stick around for our interview with Dr. Boston Leary. We'll be right back.
This episode of Tech It to the Limit is brought to you by NurseSense, the only tech built by nurses who actually worked a double. Finally, technology that doesn't make you want to scream internally. NurseSense was built by a rogue collective of overcaffeinated, underappreciated nurses who got tired of being consulted after the product launch. Features include one login to rule them all, real-time alerts for a patient's family Googled too much and now wants to argue, the smart prioritization engine that knows not everything needs to be stat, the rounding radar that uses indoor GPS to track providers, even the ones hiding in the stairwell, and the supply sniffer, which has a built-in shame signal for units that hoard the bladder scanner. And NurseSense Ambient Assistant, which responds to your voice and your tone. Document the same wound for the third time. Cage the doctor whose ego won't fit through the OR doors. And bonus, every 100th documentation you complete triggers a shoulder massage voucher and a 15-minute break with no alarms. NurseSense, because the smartest tech is the one that knows when to remove itself from the bedside. Visit www.askanurse.duh and use promo code ALERTFATIGUE to get started. No pilot required, no focus group needed, just common nurse's sense.
Welcome back, listeners. Today, we are celebrating nurses and welcoming a true powerhouse in nursing leadership and health equity. Fresh off her induction as a fellow of the American Organization for Nursing Leadership, Dr. Katie Boston Leary. Katie is the Senior Vice President of Equity and Engagement at the American Nurses Association, where she leads national initiatives like Healthy Nurse, Healthy Nation, and shapes policies that support nursing practice and work environments across the country. She brings over 30 years of experience to the table, including multiple roles as Chief Nursing Officer, and she's earned accolades like the ANCC Pathway to Excellence Award. She holds a PhD in health services, plus dual MBA and MHA degrees, and basically, if there's a leadership lane in healthcare, Katie's driven it. She's also a national voice on DEI with published works on racism and justice in healthcare, testimony on Capitol Hill, advisory roles on everything from clinician well-being to AI in nursing. And when she's not shaping the future of healthcare, she's mentoring it, serving as adjunct faculty at Case Western and the University of Maryland and lending her wisdom to multiple editorial and advisory boards. We are absolutely thrilled to welcome you with us today. Welcome, Dr. Boston Levy. May I call you Katie?
Please call me Katie. And, you know, that introduction was like top notch. Like, you know, so if you like, there's a thing that happens at my church where if the pastor says something that's really like hitting you square in the chest, you just get up and run. Like, I want to just get up and run just now the way you just introduced me. So thank you.
Aww.
Oh, wow. Awesome. What an honor. So we love to start our podcast, our interviews with our guests. We are huge fans of pun-based humor here. So we always ask our guests, whether they are dad or whether or not, what their favorite dad joke is. You have one for us you could share?
Yeah, I want to give you a joke that my husband's used on our kids. Well, my daughter, because my son's a lot older now, but they're 10 years apart. So his joke is, what do you call a pasta dish in disguise?
Ooh.
Go ahead. What?
My kids love noodles.
Impasta.
Nice. Oh, man. Oh, I got so excited because my kids love noodles. So
yeah, it was almost like you were boiling over with your excitement.
Yeah.
Feel free to use it. Yes.
Feel free to use it.
So we talk a lot about change management, almost too much in digital health, but rarely about repair. How can health systems begin to incorporate restorative justice principles when they're implementing new technology, especially in communities where trust has been broken or ignored?
Yeah, that's oh my gosh, what a great question to start off with. So repair, I think, really takes you back to looking, you know, at what is and what should have been before you move forward. And in a lot of ways, with implementing technology, particularly in healthcare, there isn't enough of a look back, right? There's more of a just look forward. This is the new day. Trust us, this will work. And I tend to tell during my talks, I'll say, you know, the biggest letdown or broken promise in healthcare is the EHR. Like the EHR had so much promise, where it was supposed to make nurses, clinicians, not just nurses, lives easier. You're going to be able to read everything. There was even the promise of the disappearing chart. Like there would not be a chart in sight ever.
Oh
that
my gosh.
Never yeah. happened. And it really has become an albatross, right, around the necks of a lot of clinicians. I remember the former Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, he made a quip at an event a few years ago where he said, you know, I don't know about you, but none of us went into healthcare because of our love for documentation. Mm. And it's just an indication of what that's become. But it's not just the EHR, right? There are a lot of technologies that have been implemented for the forward progressive movement of how things should be versus looking back to how we can set up technology to take things away, because I always try to talk about transformation versus change, which I learned from an amazing leader, Dr. Beverly Malone. And she made this quip about how at our equity summit that, you know, 4 quarters to give you can give you change for a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. That's change. But what we want is $5 for a dollar. Like that
That's
is
right.
transformation. So yeah. How do we get to transformation? How do we look at how technology can make us take away things that we don't need to be doing versus a continued layering on of new responsibilities because of the promise of technology, where sometimes a promise mostly is in line with what the C-suite needs, and it doesn't meet what the people that actually have to work on the technology needs, if that makes sense. Right? The dropping of dropping of a bill versus give me less clicks, give me less steps that I need to make, give me less equipment that I need to pull into a room for a surgery, like things like that. So that's what I like to see when it comes to technology and the repair that needs to happen.
How do we get that empathy into the heads of the people that are designing this? Like, what would you say to them if you could?
Yeah, I think the key thing there is for there to be this modeling and, you know, of course, testing, right? You know, with lab testing, there's always, when you're introducing a new lab instrument, there's always this inter-rate of reliability testing that happens with the old system and the new system to make sure that it's picking up what it's supposed to pick up with the new system before you let go of the old system. This is the same way. Where, okay, you know, we welcome this technology, but let's make sure that we test it to make sure that it's capturing all these different things. And not only include nurses, but include patients and families as well. Because you never know the cues and the different things that impact people, especially even sometimes. I remember I used to lead the Patient Family Centered Council, Advisory Council for a hospital. And you would not believe one of the first things I'm thinking of, one of the first things that they want to tackle is visiting hours. But the first thing I want to tackle was there was a machine that was sitting in the garage that where you're supposed to pay for your parking. And that machine had this audio loop voice that would tell people to remind them to take their ticket and pay for their parking before they get to their cars. But the voice was so deep and intimidating. A lot of patients will walk into the building feeling this, especially at night, this is booming voice that comes across where they're walking in already feeling as if you had to put that machine there to make sure I give you my money. And then you want to me to trust you, that you trust that you're going to give me the care that I deserve. Like, let's fix that voice. Let's fix that machine. And we went from changing the voice to taking the machine away because it's only we're only charging $1 for parking, which was kind of not even covering the cost to upkeep the garage.
Katie, I so appreciate that because you're highlighting that we have this opportunity. There's this moment, right, where we have an opportunity to redesign systems and patient journeys and care pathways, because we're at an inflection point where we have to like take a really critical look at our workflow, which is, you know, like provider speak for the, it should be provider speak for the patient experience. Mm-hmm. And so we have an opportunity to completely redesign the way care is delivered in this country. And we need to stop and think about like the end-to-end patient experience, the patient journey in that process and how technology can support it and really where there isn't a role for technology, right? Or where maybe it's not helping, it's harming. And it's really just like, let's walk a day in our patient's shoes from the moment they start in the parking garage or heck, even in the hotel getting their breakfast and all the way through. And I'm saying that from a perspective of a patient who maybe coming to a hospital from a hotel, but maybe they're just, like you say, maybe they're just our neighbors, right? Maybe they're living in their home and they need to go in for an appointment, like end to end. Let's map it out. Let's think about it. And where does technology fit and where does it really need to take a back seat? And we need to reintroduce human empathy into that conversation to make a better experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a holistic piece, right? Like if I have to catch three buses to get to this place for me to get cared for, I'm not going to be in a great mood. I'm not going to be cheery. But then when I'm not cheery, you're going to see me as, oh, this person has an attitude, non-compliant, Like, how do we understand all these aspects? Like, be more holistic in our intake so we can understand where there are opportunities for us to continue to clear the path for people to be able to come in and get the care they deserve. And it's stressful enough to enter into the space of healthcare as a consumer. It's intimidating enough, but when there's no consideration for all the things that we have to go through, no matter what your status is in terms of your socioeconomic status, there still needs to be an accounting of all of that when patients present themselves so that we are thinking about them as a whole person versus the condition that they're presenting when they show up.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a quotable moment right there. I want to pivot to another question though, Katie. So we're seeing a lot of digital health innovation aimed at nurses, but it's rarely built with nurses or by nurses, right? We're seeing a lot of digital health innovation aimed at nurses, but not nearly enough built with nurses or by them, right?
Yes.
What does true nurse-centered design look and feel like? And why is it so rare? I feel like we've been talking about this for decades. Why is it still so rare?
Yeah, it boggles my mind. But I think part of it has to do with the gender bias. I think a lot of
misogyny.
Totally. Like
I just want to be clear for our listeners, Elliot is not cheering on
misogyny. Oh, yeah, no. I'm not cheering for misogyny. I'm not.
He wants to get up and run like I was going to do, right?
That's right.
Yeah. I think that has a lot to do with it. I think there is, you know, nursing is predominantly female, even though our numbers of men in nursing is increasing. But I do believe that there's that piece that's playing into it where there's a belief that we don't know what we want and all we're going to do is talk. And yeah, we can talk, but they also don't want the emotion. They just want to get it done. So even when nurses are brought to the table, they'll entertain that for a certain amount of time. But then the flip happens, right? And all of a sudden you see a product go, how did this get built? Like, did you talk to some nurses? Yeah, we did at one point, but not along the entire process, right? It would probably be initial for the initial discovery piece, and it's already done. But then it's already done, and no one's going to go back and make any major fixes. They'll do minor tweaks here and there, but that's it. So, and I remember with going back to an EHR example, I always used to talk about how nurses tend to be leaned on for their knowledge and expertise. They're not paid for it for a lot of these, with a lot of these companies. Yeah, yeah. And then we give it away for free. And then they sell it, they take it for free, and then they sell it back to us at a rate that we can't afford. And I remember we were doing flow sheets that in the ICU for an EHR where it wasn't working for us. So they said, okay, well, make sure you can get some of your ICU nurses to come and talk to us about what it could look like. We're going to make this work for them. And they were so excited, and I made them believe that this is going to work, just sitting in these meetings twice a month with these other nurses around the country, and you're going to be able to build this product to what we need that you've been looking for this new implementation. So it would help make your life easier, only to find out that weeks later, after it was all done, they tried to sell to us for $250,000. I said, but our nurses contributed to building that. Yeah. And it cost $250,000. And that's when I realized that this is a snow job that tends to happen time and time again, where even when nurses give their knowledge to build these things, they're not paying nurses for their expertise. And I'm not saying never, because some do, but largely when you compare it to other clinician groups, not happening. And then they take it right back around and sell it to you. It's just this repeated wicked cycle that tends to happen over and over again.
Like misogyny. Yeah.
Right. I think that plays a major part in it. I really do. And I remember sitting in rooms as a nurse leader, and sometimes I feel like I'm underwater where I'm talking and no one can hear me. Like, I'm telling you this is not going to work, and you still come back and give me the same thing I told you is not going to work. Like, how is that okay? Right? So if you want my voice, truly want it, and let me see how it shows up in the product that you're building, and don't sell to me something that I helped you create when you didn't pay me for it in the first place.
OMG. Just want to bottle you up.
If we can just switch gears a little bit in the conversation, you've been a healthcare leader in the DEI space. You've testified in Washington on the topic. You're
not on DEI. That hasn't happened yet.
Oh, no, it hasn't happened yet.
More staffing and, you know, staffing and workplace violence, even though you kind of work it in there, when you're talking about the future of nursing and how we can strengthen the profession by leaning into diversity and pulling people in from marginalized communities. Definitely that. But
that's what I want to focus on in this question. Right. So from your expertise in DEI work, what is the most misunderstood aspect of diversity, equity, inclusion in healthcare? And thinking about it from the perspective of the C-suite, right? What are they missing, like, that they're not talking about? I mean, other than a lot.
And what's unfortunate is, because of the atmosphere and what's happening politically, now is being seen as if it's all about racism. And what we try to emphasize with everyone, that especially for us that are really have our legs in this space, is we have never said that. We've always said, though, that our history in the U.S. centers around racism. Like, every country has its own history. Like, Canada is different. It's more about the indigenous people and how they were treated, even though there's some elements of racism there. In India, there's classism. Like, it's very different from country to country, right? In the U.S., this is just our, James Baldwin says, and I'm probably not going to say this right, but America's history is as beautiful as it is terrible. Right? There's so much that we need to understand and how we got here, but all the things that wrap around racism impacts all these other aspects of discrimination. But what we say is DEI is not just about race. It's about making sure everyone gets their fair shot. And we give everyone the opportunity to be at their best, right? It's that justice that we're looking for. And justice is love in public. Tenderness is love in private. That's from Cornel West. So you really think about how, if you understand that DEI impacts everybody, It is not a zero-sum game. It is not about taking from one group and giving to another. It's about meeting everybody where they are, whatever their issues are, and helping them to get to their utmost best, right? That's what we're trying to get to with this work. And unfortunately, a lot of organizations are moving away from this out of fear and out of intimidation and out of the intentional lack of clarity around what these executive orders that are being pushed out. And the lack of clarity is intentional, because I heard this concept about how when you give unclear policies, you get anticipatory obedience, where people just think broad about all the other things that it could touch because of the fear, and they just go above and beyond what they should be doing in terms of compliance. And unfortunately, that's where we are with a lot of institutions. It's sad to be here, but we'll continue the drumbeat.
Katie, this has been an unexpectedly refreshing conversation. I mean, I was excited about it, but also I just love the way conversations follow their natural course, right? And so in the spirit of our podcast, which is a healthcare technology podcast, we're all about digital transformation in the industry. In the current environment and everything we've talked about right now, do you have a call to action for our listeners, knowing that we're talking to the C-suite in health systems, we're talking to the C-suite in AI development companies, solution developers? Like, you know, this is our opportunity for you to grab the mic and tell them something that you want them to hear. So what would you ask them to do right now?
I think we have to, I'm learning more about neuroleadership, right? And how that's the type of leader we need in the fourth industrial or fifth industrial revolution that we're in, where it's really about the networks that we need to build as leaders versus the hierarchy, and understanding where people are on your teams and meeting them and not coming in with all the answers, but allowing them to help with giving the answers, having a fierce resolve to win, where in spite of how dark it is, I know that there are some battles that I'm going to lose along the way. I'm going to win some, but we're going to win in the end, and having that coach mentality with your team. And that's important for leaders today. And what that applies to implementing new technology, it applies to policy change, just all the things that we're dealing with in the sociocultural space. And that empathy piece too, because we can't ignore the fact that what's happening in the world is not impacting the people that are supposed to follow us. We can't ignore that anymore. So how do we bring that into the workplace so people can understand that I know it's tough for you right now, tough for me too, but we have each other. And that moral leadership is important too, where we're not just about the bottom line, it's also about the mission, to your point, Sarah, of the fact that we're here to care for patients. I'll never forget this quote from Senator Raphael Warnock about the loving that happens in leading, where he says, to lead the people, you need to love the people. To love the people, you need to know the people. And to know the people, you have to walk amongst the people. Like, if you take that stepped approach to leading today and put all those other things down, I think that would be how we lead differently in this space, because this is not business as usual. It's not. And when it comes to technology, we have to strive and understand that we need to be intentional in creating the best of both. We're going to be the best humans that's also going to manage the best part of what technology has to offer. It's not one or the other, and there's no competition. And unfortunately, with what we were expecting with technology, we were thinking that it would be the Jetson type of thing, roller type of robot that's going to come in the room. We did not know that we're going to deal with some invisible bots. Like, we didn't expect that. Right? And now I'm hearing that in 20 or 30 years, there'll be more bots than humans. So how do we prepare for that, where we are setting up the best of both worlds, where there is that layering, right, in terms of making sure that these things are not running themselves. Humans are making sure that it's being done right. And we're leading to make sure that there's governance and rules and policies to make sure that what we intended is what being met. I remember this great quote by Dr. Jan Garcia in this film that we did with Everybody's Work. She said, I need for white people to stop apologizing for, you know, and saying that, well, no matter what the outcome was, that was not my intent. Like, we should be responsible for the intent as much as we're responsible for the outcomes. It's not just about, that's not what I meant to do, but you still harm somebody over
there. Yes, that's right. Well, that goes back to our first question, right? About repair. It goes back to that exact same thing. Well, that's an incredible call to action, the leading through neural leadership, I think, and building that network of leadership over hierarchy is a great call to action. It can apply in business. It can apply in design, in technology. Thank you so much for that. And Katie, just thank you so much for being here on the pod with us today. Thank you for celebrating Nurses Week with us. Thank you.
Happy Nurses Week, nurses. Yes.
That's right. Happy Nurses Week to all the nurses. My aunt's a nurse, and I've worked with a lot of nurses in my career. They hold a special place in my heart, and now you do too.
We love you, Auntie.
Yeah, shout out to my uncles, Jamie and Mick. What's up?
And we love you. Happy Nurses Week.
Katie, thank you so much for being here with us on Tech It to the Limit. We really appreciate having you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It was great to have you, Katie.
Stick around. We'll be right back. This episode of Tech It to the Limit is brought to you by Neural Nurse. Finally, a wearable for healthcare leaders that lets them borrow a clue. Strap it to your temple and unlock instant empathy downloads from the people you manage, especially nurses who somehow keep telling you a product won't work and you keep launching it anyway. Neural Nurse comes preloaded with the phantom feedback filter, which blocks that part of your brain that forgets that nurses gave you this idea 3 years ago. Or the feature fatigue shock collar, which delivers a mild jolt when you try to package nurse ideas and sell it back to them. Or the That's Not How Rounding Works alarm, which screams internally and now externally when you approve yet another solution that requires nurses to time travel. Plus, an experimental module that lets you feel what it's like to have your clinical expertise dismissed during a product sprint by somebody who once shadowed a nurse for 90 minutes in 2017. Neural Nurse doesn't just make you look like a better leader, it makes you sound like one by whispering back all the input you ignored the first time. Warning, Neural Nurse may cause spontaneous truth-telling, accountability, and the reallocation of budget toward clinical input. Neural Nurse, because if you're going to be the smartest person in the room, you should at least borrow the right brain. Visit www.itscalledstaffing.com and use the promo code WeWeren'tConsulted to activate your subscription today. Welcome back, listeners, and thank you, Dr. Boston Leary, Katie, for spending that time with us. That was an incredible interview. It's time now to take a bite out of some Wise Nugs, the trademark pending delicious snack of wisdom nuggets that we share each episode. And I know you're hungry, Sarah, so what are you noshing on today?
Oh, man, so much wisdom, so many nuggets, so little time. But I've got two for you, listeners. Number one, we can't say this enough on our pod. When we are designing digital tools that are aimed at nurses, they're really rarely built with them or even by them. And what's worse is when nurses actually contribute, I loved that Katie called this out, they're often unpaid for their expertise and time, only then to see the tables turned, their ideas are monetized and sold back to them. Ouch, right? So true nurse-centered design means compensating and continuously involving nurses across the entire product lifecycle. So that's Wise Nug number one. I learned from that. Thank you so much, Katie. And number two, kind of zooming out even beyond this episode to sort of thinking about the entire healthcare ecosystem and the space in which we are operating today as leaders of our companies and our organizations or of our communities, right? It's a very politically charged environment, and C-suite leaders are backing away from diversity, equity, inclusion out of fear and confusion. And I really appreciate that Katie called out this anticipatory obedience, which was essentially a knee-jerk reaction to vague policies. And so we're like overcorrecting because we're not really sure what's going to happen, right? This environment of uncertainty has us all really super nervous. And I love her reminder that, hey, DEI is about giving everybody a fair shot. It's not just about race. We talked about it includes neurodivergent patients, patients with disabilities, gender identity, sexuality, you name it. we need leaders with who can combine this moral courage. It really does take courage with what she called a neural network of leadership. And I really appreciate that call to action. We need to lead with love. We need to know our people. We need to walk among them. And let's not mistake intent for impact, especially in our technology rollouts that help shape people's health and their dignity.
Absolutely. That was tasty nuggets.
Rich.
Very tasty. Deep. Fried.
Frig, yeah. Loving it. Delicious.
I'm going to jump right on the tail end of that last nugget about the, you know, intent for impact and actually thinking about the impact. And one of the nuggets that I took away from her was the need to look back in order to repair. And I think about this in technology all the time. You can't build your lessons learned into a product or into innovation if you're not even willing to learn your lessons in the first place. Mm-hmm. You can't do that without looking back. And you can only do that by engaging with the community. That example that she gave about the automated parking meter was so simple.
Yep.
But it shows how it, to me, it shows like the bar is on the ground. It's how little work we've actually done in identifying the harms created by this healthcare system, let alone innovation and technology specifically.
Yeah.
So that was my first nugget. The second nugget, same kind of thing that you took away around her comments around anticipatory obedience. Her recommendation, or, you know, this is what I took away from it, is to try and thwart anticipatory obedience wherever we can. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are watching major institutions fall across this country, not from external pressure necessarily, but out of fear. They're doing it to themselves. Education, law, big tech, one by one, they are folding under the weight of their own self-censorship in this political climate that we have. And healthcare will be next if we don't get honest and stay aligned with each other and hold and understand that there is power in unity. Mm. Because as she said it, the good guys are not winning right now.
Right.
Bell bottoms are retro. Measles should be passe.
Right, for sure.
And like, so that's what I took away.
Man, I love it. I love your passion, Elliot. And I agree. I think this is a moment for leadership. We need to see folks stepping up and stepping out and speaking up respectfully and leading with love. And we see certain examples of that across the nation, but we need more of it. And like yesterday. So I hope everybody listening enjoyed Dr. Boston Leary interview as much as Elliot and I did. And I hope it helps you step into leadership in your own organization and in your own community.
One other thing she said, do your risk assessment. Mm. Do your risk assessment of what you are comfortable with doing, but continue to be part of the solution.
Yeah, yeah. Word. I appreciate that. Like everybody's situation is different, right? And some people have more privilege to lean into when it comes to taking those risks. So that's an excellent call out.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all we have, right? Unfortunately, Tech It to the Limit, episode 3.04 is coming to a conclusion.
That's right.
So I encourage all of our listeners to follow us on YouTube, follow us on LinkedIn, like, subscribe, all the words, you know, leave us a review wherever you pod. That really helps with the rhythms, the algorithms. Tell a friend, tell a frenemy, for God's sake, just tell someone about Tech It to the Limit. Elliot, will you sign us off with our health tech haiku of the month, this nurse's month?
Oh, I will.
Yeah.
You know I will. All right, here we go. Charting like a boss. Tech can't touch that bedside glow. Run the ward, nurses. Happy Nurses Week, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Happy Nurses Week. See you next time.
See you next time.
See you next time.
Tech It to the Limit is produced by Sarah Harper
and Elliot Wilson in consultation with ChatGPT.
Because they are masochists and also don't have any sponsors.
Yet. Music was composed by the world-famous court minstrel Evan O'Donovan.
To consume more hilarious and informative content about digital transformation in healthcare, visit us online at techittothelimit.fun.
And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and across the event horizon. See you next time on
Tech It to the Limit.